Welcome to the Full 90 Soccer Time podcast, our weekly look. Yeah, it's true. Into Seattle Sounders FC and a whole bunch of uninteresting dad life commentary, plus an attempt to understand the hottest soccer league not funded by foreign royalty. No piff fun here. It's MLS. We're your hosts for mornings on 107.7 The End and formerly of Fartland. I'm Gregor, and he's been in the locker room on the pitch and dropping all his stuff on the floor while we're doing the intro. He's sexy skankin' Brandon. Old crazy hands. What's up?
Hey, how you doing?
What'd you drop? I'm curious now.
So I got a new bike last week, and it came with a bunch of...
Of course.
They come...
Does it come with a photographer? My God, your family takes so many... photos of your family.
Dude, I know. It's actually when we booked this photographer to do pictures of our son for his like newborn photos, she was like, it's the same price for me to do 3 month photos and 6 month photos. And so we were like, okay. So trust me, I know, because imagine having to be like every 3 months be like, oh, what are we gonna wear for this? And
imagine having to be happy about your family every 3 months.
Every 3 months, you got to pretend, right? No, I love my family. Not that they listen to this. I'm saying this because I mean it, not because I think that they'll listen to this.
Well, do us a quick. Oh, wait, you were saying something, right?
Oh, yeah, I got a new bike. You asked me a question. Maybe that's how you're supposed to ask. Open up conversations instead of asking how you're doing. You ask, what's the thing that you most recently dropped?
So I go to the deli the other day, right? We were talking about this off air a little bit. And I get there and the guy is like, hello, my friend, how are you today? Or no, he doesn't say that. He goes, hello, my friend, it's great to see you. And I go, hey, man, how's it going? And he says, that's a terrible question to ask people when you see them.
That's so rude. And he said that to you.
I actually don't care how you're doing. Yeah. It's just a pleasantry.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want you to be doing poorly, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But also, I'm here for smoked turkey.
That's... Did he... Okay. I have a couple of questions. First of all, the entire idea of, like... And maybe this is a telling on me or something, but the entire idea of, like, going to the deli in 2022 seems so quaint, unless you were, like, at the Safeway deli counter, you know, versus, like, going to a proper... Like, I mean, I love going to a proper butcher these days.
Oh, my mistake.
Like,
this was Deli Ali is who I was... Okay. That's why.
Yeah.
I went up to him, and I was like, hey, do you have any turkey? And he's like, what the hell are you asking me this question for?
Why are you doing this? He's like, I do have roast beef.
I guess, come on in, let's have a sandwich.
Your,
I was like, how you doing? And he was like, no.
is your proprietor of this delicatessen foreign by chance? Like, is he not from the U.S.?
No. He's it's at the Town and Country, which used to be called Central Market in Mill Creek.
Okay.
And it's like the I have money that I'd rather waste than save on food, so I'm gonna go there.
Yeah.
And the deli's great and everyone's real nice and everything, and they really do have a great selection of like quality stuff, and you feel better about it because it's not the hormones and all that stuff. And then you think about the existentialism of the earth traveling through space at a high rate of speed and how inevitably we're just merely a speck on the planet that gets wiped out as quickly as we showed up, and how pointless all of this is. And don't ever say this to a therapist because it really confuses them. Anyway, so I go there to get my deli meat. It's not a proper standalone deli because I don't think that exists in Snohomish.
Yeah, no, I like, I am fully with you on your meat acquiring journey. I have a local butcher that I like to support. I feel like, look, the reason I ask if
he's not foreign, to answer your question.
Yeah, the reason I ask is because, like, in some places.
Because you hate foreigners. I got it.
Exactly,
it's fine.
Yeah, I live in Spokane. Come on. No, the reason I ask is because there's a lot of times where, you know, something that's just a formality in English, right, is something different in German. So, if you were to be like, hey, how are you doing to a German person, they're going to be like, oh, I'm doing well. This is what's happening recently. Like, here's this and that and the other update about my life. Where here, it's just like, hey, how you doing? Good, tired, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Move on with the conversation.
Yeah.
You were talking to me before the show. You asked, okay, well, how would you prefer me to start this conversation? And he said, ask me what book I'm reading. I'm like, dude,
he was like, do you read books?
It sounds like he's reaching. It sounds like he's like, I really want to talk about this book that I'm reading. Please ask me about the book that I'm reading.
I'm like, well, have you started reading the Old Republic from Star Wars? Because they're real bad, but it's trash, and I read them. So do you want to talk about how the Jedi collapsed or what?
In 2022, when everybody has a different, like, there's so many different unique interests out there because the internet exists and stuff like, hey, you into feet stuff? Or, like, I don't understand.
Yeah,
like
I appreciate that he's looking to build some camaraderie so the next time I come back we can have something to speak about, and I dig that, but just like let me say how you doing and then like here we are still talking about it, so it was effective or whatever. Yeah. And I think about it all the time, and now when I go in and I see him again, I don't think he remembers that conversation, but when I because I obviously avoided the deli for 6 months because I was terrified, but when I go back in now, I'm like, I like walk up to the counter and I don't know what to say and I don't know how to conduct myself. And he's like, hey, my friend, something, something. And I'm like, half a pound of smoked turkey, please.
Do you, and he's like, do you paint?
What is your favorite art movement? Is it impressionism? Because that is not mine.
There's, No, there's. This is gonna. I feel like
I prefer proto baroque.
What you're gonna do is you're gonna have to come up with a new like basic icebreaker every time you go into the deli, and then you're gonna end up on some like man. It's gonna be on like BuzzFeed someday, and it's gonna be like man been going to the same deli for 60 years. Ask deli man a new question every single day. Here's some of the questions that he is gonna be like some cutesy story. Like I just saw this thing. It was like I think it was a. Grocery store in some city where this little old lady goes to the grocery store, and every time she goes she has a different standoff with like a water gun with the guy that's working at the grocery store.
Oh yeah, I saw that.
And he'll like pull a banana out or he'll pull like a massive Nerf gun out, and every time she comes with like a bigger weapon, he comes with something even bigger, right? And eventually one of them is just gonna bomb the place. But I feel like that's you're gonna be that future story where it's gonna be like, oh, look at the forged relationship this man had with this deli, the delicatessen, because one day that guy was a total dick.
This goes back to my wife hates this story, but I love first dates. It's like I like meeting new people, knowing I'm gonna meet new people.
Does your wife hate this story because you keep going on first dates with other people?
Frankly, I think she's probably happy about it. No, but I like the idea of meeting someone new, asking them 100 questions about themselves, and like I went out on this one first date. And I asked all these questions, and this girl said, like, I am, you know, I have a thing at 6, so let's meet at 4:30, we'll get a drink or whatever and hang out, and I got to leave at 5:30 promptly. Okay, great. So at 5:29, I was like, all right, well, I'm going to respect your time here, and you have yourself a fun little time. I got up to stand up, and she was like, I learned literally nothing about you. And I was like, yeah, you're too busy talking about yourself, huh? Wink. And then, like, walked away. And it, like, she did not call me back, mind you.
Can't imagine.
Nor
why.
Did I really want her to.
Yeah.
But it was like, I just love that where you like make someone feel good about themselves telling their story, or you find out interesting tidbits about them, and it makes for interesting exploration.
As long as it's not the man at the deli counter.
Well, I just like, he just did what I do to, he's just too aggressive about it.
Yeah.
And I respect, like, if that's, so for me, if that's the type of relationship you want to have, if you want to have a like let's ask each other interesting questions, then go ahead and start.
Yeah.
Don't start with criticism, dude.
Agree.
Or like if he's like, every time I see you I always ask you an interesting question and you always say how are you, okay, I'm there for that.
Fair.
Like I'm there for that. You're right, you do put in a lot of effort and I don't notice. Again, hi to my wife. And so yeah, if that's the relationship you want to have, I'm all there. I'm with you. I don't like, okay, here's a brag. I had a chance to interview Death Cab for Cutie the other day. Ben Gibbard came into the station and we had a really nice interview. And as soon as we're done, hey, thanks for joining us on the live stream and everything. Okay, bye. Then Ben stands up and I shake his hand and he goes like, hell, how about the Mariners? And then we talk for 12 minutes about the Mariners. And it was like the most real conversation of two dudes talking about stuff that they're interested in. That's not just surface, like, you do music and I ask questions and here we are. Right. It was like we got into this conversation and it like ramped up and got very excited. You could tell both of us were nervous to be talking to another person about something that they were interested in.
Yeah.
And it wasn't relaxing. It was like we just kept ramping up and up and up and up. But it was like in that moment, yeah, you find something to bond over and it makes a more interesting conversation, one to talk about again later. Or you could just badger somebody into thinking that they're stupid and then they still talk about it a year and a half later. Either way.
Well, and what's cool is that you walk away from that conversation with somebody like Ben Gibbard, who is just a person that happens to have a huge following of people who love him and his music, right? But like you and the deli guy, it's no different. Like you're both just humans on this speck of earth that is going to be obliterated someday, and like you're just killing the time while you're here. And it's like, yeah, it doesn't have to be every conversation, doesn't have to be a deep conversation, but I agree with you. Like if he wants that to be a good conversation, make it a good conversation, and then like you'll stem from that good conversation, right? Like it's like building rapport. Like there's this barista that I see all the time that is next to my office, and she's always the person there. And it's like, yeah, we have really good conversations.
Is that your wife? Because your office is your bedroom, right?
Exactly. Yeah. She makes me coffee. No, in my other office. And we have a really good rapport because one day she was just like, who does your tattoos? And I was like, it's this guy. And she was like, I know that guy. And then we just like, now we talk about like being parents and like all of these things, right?
Yeah.
But it doesn't have to be a huge, like the one time that you ask him, are you going to go camping someday, baby? Like, and then all you've done is like, hey, now me and, you know, Deli Jim have a good conversation. And this has been a tip about how to have good conversations with people you don't know from your favorite soccer, your third favorite soccer podcast.
Yeah, it's wild. Dude is, I'll give him credit. He's hyper intelligent and very interesting, and he reads a ton, which is a quality that I wish I had, where I would, instead of looking at TikTok, which is awesome, and watching a guy make sandwiches, which is my favorite, I wish I like read it and challenged my brain a little bit. I bet you he was good at like debate in high school or something like that. I bet you he like pushes people to think. But to start a conversation with, like, if I just walked in, I was like, hey, you're fat. Like, no one's going to respond well to that, right?
Like, I'd be like, yeah, I know. Like, hey, dude, I know.
Hey, you're dumb. Like, oh, okay, well, now I have a complex about going to the grocery store, just what I needed. So. If you could do us a quick solid, click on through to Apple Podcasts and give us a rating.
Definitely 5 stars, unless you're a deli guy.
But primarily, leave us a comment. We just want to know your favorite ever Seattle Sounders FC player.
Yeah, from let's hope Jordan Morris doesn't get injured in an All-Star game to let's hope Raul Ruiz Diaz doesn't get injured in an All-Star game. Because the dude's barely played for even the Seattle Sounders because of injury. And now we're going to send him to go play against the Liga MX All-Stars. And hopefully that he doesn't pull another hamstring.
This week it's the MLS All-Stars take on the Liga MX All-Stars. We won't waste a bunch of time on that because by the time we get this out, it'll be like 9 hours away before it actually happens. So there'll be a bunch of people we don't care about playing in a game that no one cares about except for the coaches who are watching their players potentially get hurt from playing in this game. Full90podcast.com to connect with us and make sure you're up to date on all the things we're not doing.
Last week, if you have been anxiously awaiting for this podcast, you would have listened to us talk last week about how we can say that our podcast is directly related to and directly responsible for the outcomes of Sounders matches. And I think that this week I'm already feeling that because we podcasted last week and this week my hamstrings are on fire. Like, they are so sore, and I think that there must be something being associated with this club that means that anything you do, you're going to end up with pulled hamstrings.
That's real good. Well, we do another show called Nerd Talk Plus. It's on the Odyssey app or the podcast provider of your choice, so if you need more of us being clowns, then I think that other one is actually more well-informed than this one, but we made a good reference to being in the vicinity of Seattle and having bad hamstrings, so please check that out if you would. We'd love that for you.
And also, I'm not making a joke right now. Like, my hamstrings actually hurt, and I don't know if it's possible.
No, we believe you. You just got a new bike.
I don't know if it's possible to, like, pull your hamstrings doing a podcast. It's definitely probably from the cycling. However, it could be. I'm just asking questions, bro. I'm just asking questions.
You need to Chad Marshall it, bro, and get yourself some pickle juice.
Oh, it's Chad Barrett, actually.
That's what I meant to say, but we wrote Chad Marshall below, and that was a mistake for me. The sweatiest man to ever go through the Nike testing facility. Used to be a former Sounders player, kind of like a Kellen Rowe type, like, journeyman that steps up when you need him to. It is like you can count on him to get out there and play, only he was a goal scorer. And he would sweat more than any other player that Nike had seen, and they made him drink pickle juice in order to keep the electrolytes up. Something that, did we talk about my stupid diet on this show? Because I've had to start consuming electrolytes from a pouch in water because it was to the point where I was cramping so bad that I went to cut a tag off of my pants and my obliques cramped. Okay, I don't know if you've seen me before, but it's not like I'm an obliques guy. Okay, I haven't been working on that muscle group.
Has your new, let's see, we're not calling it a diet, right? Your new consumption pattern, has that also been in addition to a certain type of workout regimen where all of a sudden your obliques are like, need to do stuff but don't have the sugary Skittles to support me anymore? Or like, where are the Doritos that I used to eat that helped me with these?
Where is the layer of blubber that you used to have that helped protect us? No, actually, part of it is that I'm in this drastic cutting phase right now that I'm not supposed to work out.
Oh.
And so it's actually ideal. I just, like, am miserable because I can't have cookies. I feel great because food tastes incredible now because I've cut out all these chemicals and all the things that, you know, prop up foods. And so, like, natural food is amazing. I recommend it to everybody. And I'll tell you what, dude, I lost 16 pounds in 21 days. Without having to, like, torture myself just by eating a lot of good foods and not having snacks at ever. So, yeah, it's like, if I'm getting back into Sounders judging shape, then here I am. I'm on my way. If there's ever a media day again, perhaps I will not be embarrassed enough to go play in it. But I can't work out for 2 months. And so it's tough. Karate's tough and all that because I'm, like, dead after 2 seconds was having the weirdest cramps. I woke up and my toes were just overlapping, cramping. It was like, I don't know if you've ever gotten that before, but it was terrible.
I mean, you basically just have a massive, what it sounds like, potassium deficiency.
Dong?
Sorry. Yeah, that too. Your dong doesn't have enough potassium.
That is not the case. Again, contact my wife. She will inform you about the shortcomings there.
I think you could attribute all of that to the fact that you've cut out a lot of food, and I could attribute the fact that my hamstrings hurt because I've been riding my bike a lot lately, but realistically it's because we are part of
proximity
the Seattle Sounders now. Yeah.
The curse is back.
What did we do?
The first time that Atlanta, I blame Deb.
Yeah, obviously.
My mother-in-law, Deb, this is her team, even though they didn't exist when she moved to Seattle. Her team is Atlanta. They beat Seattle 2-1 at home. It was the first time Atlanta has ever won against Seattle. And yeah, I just...
Isn't that crazy?
It's crazy for a team that's been as dominant, 60,000 people in the stands. They're like East Coast Seattle when it comes to soccer. But based on their success and their ability to win championships and their ability to have fandom and to pack that place full. And for, as my mother-in-law always points out, all the other teams, no one supports because they're always miserable. And so you get a little, I was like, well, I remember that the Braves had pretty consistent sellout crowds for, I don't know, 10 straight years. So I wouldn't be the fair weather fans. And I'm like, well, that's sports for you.
Yeah.
You know? Like, we didn't grow up ingrained with it. So
I mean, hey, I grew up a Seattle Mariners fan, and I tell you, I went to way more games in 2001 than I did in any other season before or after that. So I don't think it means that you're fair weather. I mean, even the Sounders, if they start going through a string, like, say the Sounders, who have had obviously great attendance, no longer record-setting attendance, but who have had great attendance for so long, if they start going through a season where it seems like it's, like right now they're on the cusp of potentially not making the playoffs, or potentially, there's still plenty of season left, but there's like the cusp of potentially not making the playoffs. They're still getting a draw, but like what happens if you go through a couple of seasons where this team that's always drawn such a crowd, it has such diehard supporters, starts to go like, oh, it's actually not that fun to go watch my team get their butts kicked every single week.
Whoa, I just looked at the standings. Seattle Sounders, eighth place in the West. Okay, so that's a couple spots out of the playoff picture, right? Mm-hmm. I did not realize that the Sounders are 10-12, that they've lost two more games than they've won, and with only two draws. That's like a huge historic difference, because lots of times the win column wouldn't be big enough, but the draws would be the thing keeping the in the running. But 12 losses,
yeah,
that's a big number to deal with.
So the Sounders have 10 matches left this season, of the regular season. And granted, like we've looked at the standings, right, where, you know, somewhere between, so the Sounders currently sitting on 32 points are only 3 points out of fourth place in the West, right? So like 10 matches left, the margins are so, so fine. But, you know, as somebody pointed out on the Sounders subreddit, the Sounders are on pace to have a record setting in a bad way amount of losses this season.
Yeah.
The Sounders have, I don't know what the worst season that they've ever had, where like the most losses that they ever had. I'm actually assuming it's probably 2016 when they like snuck into the playoffs. The season that Siggy got fired and we brought in Ladero and Schmetzer took the Sounders to the MLS Cup and won. I'm assuming that that was probably previously, up until that point, the worst season in their history. Now the Sounders on pace to have the most losses, and yet they're still only 3 points out of the top four in the West, I should say.
That's so crazy. And then you look at the number one team in the league, I got to confirm that they're number one over the East, but even LAFC with 11 matches to go can't even come close to that record-setting year of, you know, a couple seasons ago where they got knocked out by the Sounders.
Yeah.
Like, it's fascinating to me that the league must have a little bit more parity this year, unless you're sporking Kansas City. So I'm looking at the total losses per season, and what you said that they have 12 right now.
Yeah.
That's more than 21, 20, 19, 18, 17. So 2016 was 14 losses. That's the most in their history, and it looks likely that Seattle will hit that mark again. 13 losses in 2015. 2014, the Supporters Shield year, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, 2014, they had 10 losses. This is a team, I got my impressions wrong. This is a team that loses a lot, dude. Like,
yeah,
it's 34 matches played and 10 losses to win the league is pretty crazy.
We talked about a little bit last week about how a lot of the results that the Sounders have actually lost this season, out besides two of these results, they've all been by one goal, right? So a lot of these losses, imagine where the Sounders would be sitting right now points-wise if some of these losses were actually draws. And we've seen a lot of the defense, a lot of these goals that have been given up aren't because the Sounders are bad. It's because of careless defensive mistakes that, I mean, granted, that's the game, right? Like, a goal is a goal. It doesn't matter how you've given it up. But it's not like the Sounders are consistently being manhandled week in and week out. Even the loss against Atlanta this week was...
God, you know, that was a wonder goal that the guy scored from 30 yards out. Like,
and there were really dying seconds. Yeah, and
there
were some really long, encouraging spells of the Sounders playing really, really well in that match, especially on the road.
I saw Jeremiah Oshan broke it down for, like, on second watching, how the second half was actually, like, really encouraging from Seattle on the road, like you say. And it wasn't just, like, it was heartbreaking to lose that way, but really, without that one kind of moment, that was a pretty evenly matched game. Now, Atlanta, not so good this year, but just getting a big win against the former boss or whatever.
So we've talked about this, we talked about this a lot last week, and I think that this is probably the question that's on the horse that is getting that's getting beat to death. This question is getting beat to death over and over and over. But I think it stands to ask this, and it's really interesting to see at least where the Sounders subreddit community has landed on this, is what would it take for this season to be considered a success? Now, we've talked about a lot about how, you know, the Sounders have won a major, not only a major trophy, they have won the major trophy in our region and the only team in MLS history to have done so, to win the Champions League.
Shout outs to VVin on the Sounders subreddit for putting up a poll that we're going to reference a bunch here that asks, and I like the question itself, like you said, what would you consider the season a success? What would it take? Win the CCL, make the playoffs, win a playoff game, win the MLS Cup, and no opinion. And Brandon, where do you land on that for it to be a success? Before we reveal what the general public thinks, where do you land on what it takes for the season to be a success?
It's hard because with the CCL, the Champions League happening so early, this unlike every other league in the like the European, the UEFA Champions League, right, which happens toward the end of the season. Like, the final is played, usually you already know who the champion of each of the domestic leagues who is playing in the final is, right? In CONCACAF, when the trophy is awarded in May, the Sounders, MLS, still has so much of the season to play. So you're realistically looking at, like, the trophy is played by the best teams from, and this is, I understand how Champions League worked, but from the previous season. Like, the Sounders were hot toward the end of the last season, so you carry that momentum into the next year's Champions League final. So so I will say that, to answer your question, I think that there's no doubt that the Sounders are going to look back on 2022 as the best team to maybe not this season's team, but look back as a success, because you've won a major trophy, and then the following year you're going to be playing in the Club World Cup. So, like, that's like the most significant, probably the biggest mountain that no team in MLS has ever been able to climb. Now, that said, it's still going to feel like garbage if they can't make the playoffs.
Garbage.
Now, for me, we talk about this all the time, but there's been these seasons where the Sounders start off like garbage, right?
Garbage.
And then they have, after the July slump, they have a chance to be able to make a comeback, to rebound, and make a good run to the end. Take 2016, for instance. Bad season, great recovery. So I think right now we can say that this season is a major success because of CCL, and the playoffs will solidify it as a new benchmark that they have to get to. I think that we've come to expect them to make the playoffs because of the 11 or 12 times in 11 seasons or whatever it is that they've been able to pull that off. But also, the playoffs is so weird because so many teams go. So if you don't go, that's kind of a major disappointment. So I guess it, for me, it depends on what the consequences are. But I agree with you that I consider CCL champion to be a massive success, and that they went into it knowing that they were going to pour all these resources into it. So when you look back historically, if this is the first year they don't make the playoffs, that's going to have like a big dramatic historic stamp for the people that lived it. But in 10 years, when you look back and say the Sounders won CCL in 2022, done.
Yeah.
that's not going to be like, but they also didn't get the playoffs that year. No one's going to think that way. Like, from a long-term perspective, it's such a positive.
I think what you said is really important to note, is that the Sounders did win the Champions League, and they had to pour a ton of time, resources, and energy into doing so. Therefore, I mean, and this is true in any league, any domestic league in Europe, in North America, wherever it might be, is that you have to be able to manage both your regular season tournament as well as your cup runs, right? Like the Champions League. Now, in other domestic leagues, there are no caps on salary. There are no restrictions on the amount of money they can spend, right? The Sounders have to use, like, they, as Garth Lagerwey has always said, we are prioritizing the Champions League. When you do that, that means you are deprioritizing other things like the MLS regular season.
And to that point, João Paulo, designated player that you need to have a monstrous result, there's no depth for that guy. There, I mean, there are other players who can do it, but there's not another João Paulo on the team. Yeah. And so you lost, just like we lost Jordan Morris a few years ago because of the Champions League, you lost your arguably most important player in the defense. at the 1/3 point of the season. And so, yeah, that is prioritizing the squad and the depth that you have and the money you can spend on winning this stupid tournament.
It's that, it's that Thanos meme, right? It's like, what did you win? And it's the Champions League. What did it cost? Everything. Right. So what I find interesting is that question that's posed by VVin on the Sounder subreddit says, what would it take for you to consider this season a success? 1,500 votes roughly, and 601 of those votes over the next highest at 481 votes was make the playoffs. Now, 481 folks said winning the Champions League. More people said that this season will only be a success if the Sounders make the playoffs. I find that really interesting, and it's kind of a what have you done for me lately type of view towards the MLS regular season.
Yeah, I mean, so then, you know, let's follow that up with the next obvious thing that we keep talking about. Should they not make the playoffs? And should things go poorly and the hatchet has to drop because we're reacting too emotionally to things, who would you rather keep? If you could only pick one, would you keep Garth Lagerwey or Brian Schmetzer? And I think this is no offense to the person asking it, who is Roustin 509. No offense to that person who's asking it, because it's a good question and it's a good thought starter, but I think it's preposterous. Yeah. I think if you don't make the playoffs and you're going to ditch somebody, that you're overreacting. You know, at the very least, you have a 6-month run in the next season before that happens, because this isn't the Prem. We're not going to lose out on 50 or, you know, $1 billion worth of TV revenue if the team doesn't, if the team gets relegated or doesn't make the playoffs, which is our version.
Well, it'd be really interesting if the Sounders, the year after winning the Champions League, don't qualify for the Champions League, which I don't know. Do you get,
they automatically do that, right?
If you win the Champions League, do you get an automatic berth the following season? I'm not sure.
I feel like that's,
I'm actually not sure. But so okay. This is actually a really interesting question that they posed on Reddit is, yeah, who would you rather keep, Garth or Schmetz? And I think what actually makes this more interesting is the fact that this is a contract year for Garth Lagerwey. The end of this season, he is out of contract and he has achieved everything except for maybe the supporter shield with Seattle Sounders. And who knows, maybe Garth is on to or wants to be on to bigger and better things. Maybe it's international. Maybe it's another club. Maybe it's Europe. Like who knows what the market is for a guy like him. But like,
oh, could you imagine with an American owner of one of those clubs in Europe, or like even take like Leeds, where you have American talent coming through, getting a guy like Garth who understands the world of soccer in America to be able to be part of that.
Or understanding, not like I would imagine totally like a championship club or like a lower Premier League club where you're working within such limited financial restrictions. Where,
yeah,
like,
tight margins.
Like what, maybe Garth Lagerwey's talent would be wasted on a club like Chelsea that can just spend millions on whoever they want. It's like not hard to go pick somebody who you think is good at soccer, but like put him in a club like Leeds or like maybe another like Nottingham Forest where you have to like work within a lot of financial restrictions. That's where, I mean, now I don't know how he's going to deal with the without Tam and Gam in the Prem, but anyway, I think like that all this is to say is that Garth is going to have options next season.
From Wikipedia, unlike its European and South American counterparts, the winner of the CONCACAF Champions League does not automatically qualify for the following season's competition.
There you go. So the Sounders,
dating back,
I believe,
to 1962, the competition was called the CONCACAF Champions Cup back in the day. Okay.
I think the Sounders would have to either win the West, because they're already out of Open Cup. They're not going to win the Supporter Shield. They either have to win the Western Conference. They're not going to win the Eastern Conference, or the MLS Cup.
Now, should I reveal who you voted for, Brandon? Because I don't know if you want that heat coming at you or whatever. Who would you rather keep, Garth Lagerwey or Brian Schmetzer?
I know this is the unpopular opinion, but I voted Garth Lagerwey. I'd keep him.
That's so tough because Schmetz is such a name, and he's been so, even when things are down, he turns it around and gets big performances. But there's no arguing that Garth Lagerwey brought in some big talent without having to shell out the cash for the Gareth Bales of the world. He's been able to find something. Like the Rui Diaz acquisition is incredible. And I don't know if that's Henderson or Garth or a combination of the two making that happen, but I mean, that's arguably the biggest move the Sounders have made in their, maybe Obafemi Martins or Deuce or whatever, mm-hmm. but that's big. It's really tough because I'd rather keep Schmetz because I'm a sentimental person sure. and I react to things emotionally rather than logically. And so I respect your take because I think business-wise, it's probably good and you can probably get some... You could probably find, you know, the coach does 10% of the on field during the match's management, and it's the rest of the stuff they do behind the scenes. So I don't know how much Schmetz handles there, but it's like,
well, even the on field stuff, like you go in with a game plan that is determined by your staff, right? About like, and probably in the 60th minute or so, depending on how the game is going, we'll sub in this person, and if it's going a different way, we'll do it this way. So even that, like the now, not I'm not trying to diminish the amount of influence that somebody like Brian Schmetzer has on a club or any coach really has on a club, right? But I think that you look at the way that this team transformed under Garth Lagerwey. I'm totally a sentimental person. I would never want to get rid of Schmetz, nor do I think that we're facing this choice in the upcoming season. Obviously,
no.
There's so many things that we can point to as supporters, that the staff can point to as people who are directly involved with the club of like, we've lost João Paulo. Raul Ruiz Diaz was out for a stretch. We poured time, money, energy, and resources into the Champions League, and then we had a big hangover after that. Like, the Sounders are likely, in my opinion, still going to make the playoffs. Like we talked about, there's only a 3-point spread between their 8th place position and the 4th place position where Minnesota United currently sit. So I think that like we're never going to be faced with this choice. But, you know, it is really interesting. Like, people are already thinking about, you know, losing coaches the year that the Sounders have won a major trophy.
Now, Brandon, how are you on time? Because I have one more question for you.
I'm good.
So we talk about this frequently because I think it's really important, but we're seeing all of these defensive mistakes and a little bit of banter between like the Arriagas and Rusnaks of the world and stuff as they... and Nuhu constantly upset, and that was an unfortunate own goal for him, and I don't know how I felt about that because Josef Martinez was clearly blocking Stefan Fry, who had it covered, but without Nuhu's intervention. You know, okay, anyway, all of those things, right? But we talk about what after Jimmy Traore and people always say Gonzalo Pineda. I didn't realize that he was so instrumental in the defense part of the team. I don't know that he was or not. But anyway, these two guys leave, and the Sounders at the back start to look a little shakier. I'll give Arriaga props all day long that he's matured in the years that he's been with Seattle. But still, I don't feel strong about Yamar and Arriaga working as a pairing back there. And there's a lot of mistakes and there's a lot of unnecessary goals. And when you're talking about a season that's coming down to one goal losses, you know, they're not getting beat up 4-0 with no ability to score. It's these mistakes that are being made that have to be cleaned up. And I wondered where we would go as a club that we're obviously in the decision-making process of, where we would turn to find the next big defensive coach. I don't even know who's handling the job right now, but like obviously things have to get a little bit better in order to grow. And so the name that comes to mind for me, of course, is Tacoma Defiance head coach or manager, Wade Weber, a wonderful human being, a former defender, and a guy who's got the got those Defiance finally cooking a little bit. But I don't know what you would do with Defiance then, and I don't know how that would impact things. Where would you turn if you wanted to make this happen?
I think my obvious choice is probably Chad Marshall. He's a guy who seems like he loved his time in Seattle, and at points on, like when you follow him on Twitter, has seems like he wants to return here and takes every opportunity that he can to come catch a match here.
Where does he live?
I don't know. I don't know if he's like back in Ohio where he played for so long with Columbus, or
gonna
what.
I kind of
I don't know where he's from originally either, but I mean, my less obvious choice is Roman Torres, just because I love that energy. I'd love that back in Seattle.
What? No.
No, I don't want him as a coach. I just want him as like a mascot. No, I think Chad Marshall is the guy. I mean, if you bring in, I think Wade Weber's a great shout as well. But Chad Marshall is a guy who's done it at the highest level in MLS. Won trophies with the Seattle Sounders, is going to be able to, hopefully, would be able to command a lot of respect, as well as be able to do the camaraderie side with the club, because he's not been out of the game for that long. Look at Andy Rose, who's currently on the Sounders coaching staff. I think Chad Marshall would be an awesome side. Even, like, I don't know, do you get a Brad Evans in there, who's still so actively involved with the club? I just don't know if he's interested maybe to work on that side of things.
What about a Steve Zakuani
as a defensive
coach?
Just as
a manager in general. No, just as in general, though. Like, I feel like he coaches kids, and so he might be working on his badges. I want to talk to him. Maybe off the record he would tell us whether or not he's up to that. Yeah, I fully hear you on the Chad Marshall thing, and it would be awesome. Again, like, I'm just curious to know where these guys are in their journeys to getting there. Like, I didn't know Andy Rose was pursuing his coaching badges, and so for him, like, you have to... I don't know what the rules are in MLS specifically, but you have to get trained as a coach to be able to coach a squad at the highest level, right? And so you go through preliminary stuff and you take tests. And, like, even like Frank Lampard in England, who played at the highest level with Chelsea and then the even higher level at NYCFC, had to go and get the certificates to be able to step up and coach at that level, almost like your license for driving in Formula One.
I think if you were a professional player for a certain amount of time, you do actually get to start at a base level of the coaching badge certification. So I always thought that was really interesting. So, like, actually former players do have a faster path toward becoming head coaches. But I do think that I don't know what the requirements are for, like, an assistant coach or something like that. But I think if you bring in, you were just talking about, I think so interesting, is, like, obviously the margin for a lot of these losses for the Sounders is so slim. And a lot of those one goal losses were from just, like, dumb mental mistakes, right? And if you bring in a guy like Chad Marshall, who was such a focused and strong and sturdy player, who did not make a lot of those mistakes, was not caught out going to ground, bringing people down, getting red cards, yellow cards, anything like that. He's like such a, like, does he bring in that stability? Does he bring in that focus and, like, really get the team back to fundamentals where they're not giving up these silly goals? And, like, Yamar isn't losing his marking and, like, looking like a orca leaving the water and completely missing the seal that he's trying to eat. You know what I mean? Like, how does Chad Marshall, like, can a guy like Chad Marshall come in and just clean that up?
Yeah. And so then, like, I don't know what the requirements are. I just kind of skimmed around a little bit here to try and find that. But regardless, like, does Chad Marshall have, like, we watched Wade Weber, who played at a high level, and it took, you know, he was coaching the academy and then he worked his way, and it took a year to be able to get the Defiance going the way that he needed. And I wonder how much experience, like, how different the management side is than the playing side, and what skills you have to learn to be able to make that leap. And if a guy like Chad Marshall needs the experience managing something before he could make the leap. Now, of course, we referred to him all the time, not just you and I, but the collective Sounders world and the people who pay attention to MLS on a higher level a little bit, as, like, Chad Marshall had such success, Defender of the Year so much, and, like, had so much that, like, you could name the award for Defender of the Year after him based on how successful he was. So that, like, I agree with it. That puts him in a really good place to be able to potentially take that role. My big fear is that we would see him come and then have to, like, if things didn't work out, to have to lay off a Chad Marshall or a Brad Evans or a Wade Weber.
I mean, think about the fact, I think we maybe mentioned this a little bit last week, is how difficult emotionally it was for the Sounders to let Ziggy Schmidt go. Imagine how much more so a coach like Brian Schmetzer, who's had the success with the club, who's literally spent his entire career with the Seattle Sounders, from player to assistant manager to manager. Like, imagine the emotional depth that you would have to go as Adrian Hanauer and this ownership group would be to have to let go somebody like him. I think to a lesser extent, somebody like Chad Marshall, who is so beloved by the club. And it's almost like don't meet your heroes, right? Like, don't let your heroes come back and lead your club, because ultimately you might have to make a hard decision. You'd rather let somebody go and retire at the top, like, you know, not that this was Arsene Wenger's case, but like somebody like him who took the club as far as he could, right? And then they let him go after that. Now, can you do the same with somebody like a Brian Schmetzer? Not saying that that needs to happen, but like, you're right. Like, you bring in somebody like Chad Marshall, who effectively, you know, is affectionately
it better work.
Called Dad Marshall. Yeah, you better hope that that works, because you don't want to bring somebody like him in and have to let him go. Not that, like, I feel like the assistant coach moves ever generate that much of a hubbub, but losing Gonzalo Pineda was a big deal. Losing Jimmy Traore, I think the Sounders knew at the time those were massive deals. And now I think we're definitely seeing the knock-on effects of those losses.
I think Nuhu is definitely seeing the knock-on effects of those. Sorry, Nuhu, we love you still. You're still number one.
I mean, I think Chad Marshall, like, who would you rather hear, hey, Nuhu, you're not up to speed anymore lately. We have to drop you for a couple games for, you know, I don't know, Alex Roldan or whoever it might be that's going to come in and take his place, Jackson Reagan. Would you rather hear that from Chad Marshall, or would you rather hear it from Freddie Juarez, who's another Sounders assistant coach, right? Like, I don't know. I think if I'm a player, I'd rather hear it from somebody that I've even played with, like Chad Marshall.
Yeah. All right. Well, in case this podcast was too long and you didn't listen, it's too long, didn't listen.
Too long, didn't listen.
So, Reddit, what book have you read recently? First Date Update with Gregor. Too long, didn't listen.
Sorry, I wasn't listening because I'm not good at being a conversationalist.
Killing me. You're killing me, Brandon.
Too long, didn't listen.
Evidently, we're bringing in Chad Marshall as the defenders coach for Seattle Sounders FC because we run the club. Too long, didn't listen.
Just the closer you get, just hold on to your hamstrings.